by chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Grass make dab in the middle of it. Grass make dab in the middle. We are grass make dab in the middle of it. Right on schedule.
The secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. We're going to start off this first hour with a clip from Nick Bagage on the world mind. And all of these things about what's going on out there, surveillance and so forth. And he has some very, very insightful things to say about Cambridge Analytica and so forth. And I'll expand a little bit on at the end of this clip. Nick Bagage is really a fine mind, and he really has been hitting on this world mind, this mind control and so forth for years. So it's important to listen to what he has to say.
The emotional side, you see, is the power. And this is what the left right now is hijacking, you see. They're trying to get the emotion, and then they control the thought. You see, the messaging, the theme that's held in the consciousness then of everyone. And when you link a thought with an emotion, you have power, you see. But they're mixing it with a dark energy, with anger and violence and hatred. This is evil. You see, this is how evil's power manifests in the earth on the fundamental basis. This is wrong fundamentally. You see, this is the misuse of what we are as created human beings by denial of what we are at our essence, which is not black, white, yellow, red, pink, or green. It is humanity. It's so good to be here on this Friday afternoon in most of the world. Still Friday morning here in Anchorage, Alaska, headed in to noon at the end of the hour. You know, what a week again. You know, it's just like the insanity continues. And just before the break, we were talking a little bit about what may be coming in terms of hyperinflation and some of the predictions about how this craziness continues. And what I would say about that is all the money that's in the pipeline, and a lot of it is stuck somewhere, as was earlier reported, that will loosen up. That will change. But then eventually, you know, the music stops, and they've loaded us all onto the Titanic, and we're playing musical chairs on a sinking ship is really the best equation in terms of the economy. So you need to be thinking about that. Do what you individually can about that. And continue to be prudent with your cash. I say this also, you know, having my experience here in Alaska with national banks and state banks and credit unions, what I've discovered in the last several months, we discovered it during the earthquake a few years back. We had the 7-point-something earthquake up here, and the banks closed except for, you know, state banks and local credit unions. And I would suggest to every listener to move your money out of national banks into local banks that are accessible to you. Look at your credit unions. Look at who has accessible hours. My credit union in Anchorage is open on Sunday. Kind of convenient. So think about getting your money a little closer to home and out of the big banksters' hands. That would be a good idea. I recommend it highly. Here in Alaska, particularly, because a lot of the big banks have said they will not invest in the Arctic anymore. In other words, they will not invest in America anymore because we're 20% of the landmass. We're the biggest natural resource base left. And the big banks who got bailed out a few times, they want to get bailed out again. There's, you know, this is it. This is discrimination. You know, when you look at our congressional delegation, Sullivan, Murkowski, and Young have all, you know, screaming about this because, hey, a lot of federal money goes here. A lot of state money goes into these big banks. and they won't bank on our future, time to tell the globalists to take a hike. But today's agenda, I want to shift around a bit. I want to get back to one of my topics of the past that we've not dealt a lot with. And it's the World Wide Web as it relates to the worldwide mind. I want to say that again. The World Wide Web as it relates to the worldwide mind. And what am I talking about there? There was a PBS special a number of years ago. You can look it up. And it was called the Worldwide Mind. And it was a prediction that was going out decades from where we are even today. But it was a number of years ago, and they were suggesting that at some point, instead of an internet where we can dial in or dial out, you know, what would be available is something that you just were in, where they just could kind of look inside and literally connect the minds of the planet up. That is a profound thought, if you think about it. The integrated brains in a politically correct culture. Now, think about that. You know, in the last couple hours, we've been hearing about, you know, screening and segregating what can be said and how it can be said and when it can be said or if it can be said at all, you know, controlling speech. So I want to talk about this in a broader context today, and I want to go back to some of my work on the mind control issue. Controlling the Human Mind is the book and the video only and exclusively in hard copies available from InfoWars Store. And so you can get those there. And the electronic versions are available at earthpulse.com. There's links to get those. Take a look at earthpulse.com and sign up for my newsletter. It's free. I'm kicking out the first one in years in the next week. So get on the list at earthpulse.com for the free newsletter. Integrated brains and political correctness. Think about this. If, in fact, this comes to be that they can link every brain on the planet, that is a whole nother ballgame now, isn't it? One of the things that we predicted over 20 years ago, we would reach a stage where you could literally download, dump information, bypassing the subconscious directly into the brain, bypassing even the conscious and embedding it there in such a deep way that it was literally programming. Now the question becomes, in compulsory education in K-12, who controls the curriculum, right? The programming, if you will. I joke about it with my friends, you know, because I feel like with my granddaughter who I'm raising, Aurora, I'm the chief programmer. You see, that's what parents do, not the government and not some esoteric weird connection that some moron thinks is a good idea, linking the brains of the world together in some artificial way. Because what I'll also weave into this conversation is the reality that the best in quantum physics tells us that we're already connected in this fundamental way, whether we recognize it or not. And we'll get into that a little bit. But I want to talk about digital privacy. I got notes today because I really want to make sure I hit the high points. Digital privacy moves from gathering data. I'm just collecting it. Think about this. And I wrote about this years ago when we were talking about data valence and the collection of data and how that would be stored. And everybody was laughing back then, 25 years ago, because people said, oh, no worries. You know, they'll never be able to sort that data. Well, guess what? Yes, they can. Commercially and governmentally, they can sort all that data now, and they do. It's part of the profiling programming that goes on through organizations like the Cambridge Analytica. It is what the whole age of surveillance capitalism, which is a great book, is all about. And that's what that's about. It's really well documented. And this one is a really great one targeted. This one is about Cambridge Analytica. And Cambridge Analytica actually influenced over 60 governments' elections before they kind of got buried under some other corporate names. But big data. So we knew about that, but now we're shaping it differently. Now it's not just about getting it from all the places you look and search and collecting your data. It's about going inside and extracting the data. Now, how close are we? We're getting closer. every year, and I call it digital resolution. You know, the pixels, you know, how tight it gets and how clear the image is. Resolution. Think about it that way, too. As the science advances, programming speeds increase, and when we cross the threshold, and some say we have, to quantum computing, now it's all penetratable and understandable, interpreted, and can be collected, cataloged, and used. And then think about this. If you understand the signaling well enough, now you can reverse that, you see, because now you can create the same kind of signaling that's receptive and can be received by the brain, and you can send it in. And so discernment in terms of how information comes and goes will become a very big deal in the coming years and decades. And where we are right now, some will say we have the technology already, and perhaps we do. But here's where this goes. This is the very violation of who we are fundamentally as human beings, and it's the artificial system. Think about this as the materialistic version of reality creation. People who just think we're flesh and bones and this is how we have our 80 years if we're lucky, and poof, we check out, we're dead, we're dust. And then there's the other school of thought that says we're a soul occupying a body and has a spiritual dimension over here on this side of the equation. And in the middle of the two are something no one can see or touch. It's human thought and human emotion. And when you connect the two, this is a powerful thing. You see, this is when the left and right brain come together, the heart and mind flow into each other, the material subordinate to the spiritual, and you do what you were created to do as someone created in the image and likeness of God. The other is an illusion, an abstraction, an engagement without power, but an intrusion into the very essence of our soul.
He's talking about integrated minds, a world mind. He's saying Plato had this world spirit, this world idea, you know, centuries ago, millennials ago. So what the modern idea is in, you could say, social control, and we're talking about the British having some of the deepest research in this. He also mentioned Cambridge Analytic. And to give you a little insight about Cambridge Analytic was that Cambridge Analytica was an offshoot of the SCL group. An SCL group was a private British behavioral research and strategic communication company. And, in the United States and other countries. And it had this big scandal, when it had a big scandal with Facebook a number of years ago. But this is coming right out, you could say, of the British hierarchy of mind control and geopolitics. And it's alleged that they've created Cambridge Analytica, came up with about influencing about 60 different elections worldwide. So when Nick Begich talks about Cambridge Analytica, he's talking about a very, very deep, you could say, mining operation. And they mined our minds. So that's what's going on, is that Analytical and just hundreds of other companies throughout the world have been created to mine our data, our minds, and to influence us in certain ways. I first got onto this years ago when I stumbled onto what was now called the semantic web, okay? And the semantic web is a system, okay, of taking spoken language and all the different kinds of, you could say, definitions and so forth that we have, and creating machine language out of that to where machines can talk to each other. And what I found sort of interesting about this is that this is the new, you could say, way, it's called, the standards were being set up by World Wide Web Consortium, W3C. And the goal of the semantic web is to make internet data machine readable and to enable the encoding of semantics with the data. So one of the interesting languages, that I ran across in here was my gosh, it was OWL language, okay? And it stands for Ontology Web Language. But the original name of this was OLW, okay? Ontology Language Web. But they transposed the W and the L to make OWL. And if you researchers out there have done your research, then you know at the Bohemian Grove, there's a big OWL that they pay homage to every year at the beginning of the 17-day retreat, end of July at the Bohemian Grove. And it's an esoteric occult meeting of all these different groups throughout the world. And so this OWL is they do funny things like this. The real insiders that are behind all this world movements, you know, like world communist movements and world mind movements, you could say, the integrated mind movements, you could say, they come up with these little sayings like that just to sort of prick our interest and among themselves. See, these are little jokes. These are inside jokes among themselves. Okay. And that's where they really get off on this. And they get real, you know, insightful and occultic among themselves. Coming up is a clip from Matt Bracken, and he's going to bring us down to reality here about what he sees about what's going on right now. But here we go with Matt Bracken.
Well, watching David's show the last hour, obviously he's dead on the money. We are going to see things that if you think that the first half of 2020 was amazing, some people say the first few months of 2020 were like a decade. Well, we're just gearing up. The election isn't until November. And the election is really going to be the battle, the main battle of our lifetime. Because after the unfortunate death of George Floyd, you know, with the knee on his neck, this was taken as the go code, the activation code for Marxists all over the world. Now they can at various times come right out and call themselves Marxists, and at other times they retreat behind camouflage using cutout foundations and organizations. But when you watch the money, you see where it comes from. The money comes from these globalist corporations that are working hand in glove with the Chinese communists. You know, companies like Google and YouTube that would love to absolutely crush the last vestige of freedom. And make no doubt, America is the last citadel. America is the redoubt. If you think that America can collapse into anarchy and then tyranny, either from the left or the right, and the rest of the world would be unscathed, that you can take off to Uruguay or New Zealand, and your life will just go on placidly as before. If America goes down, then countries like Uruguay or New Zealand will be picked off like low-hanging fruit. They won't last a decade. They'll be gone too. So this really is the battle. And this is the period where I would compare it to 1920s Germany when the street fighting begins. It's no coincidence that Antifa uses the same communist-inspired logo as the communists who were engaged in the street fighting against the National Socialists in the 1920s. It's no coincidence. It's the same people. It's flowered at the roots of continued generation upon generation. They've won the long march through the institutions. They've turned our children against their own country. And now we're going to reap the bitter fruit. And that's what I'm going to talk about in the next segment, about the historical roots of Antifa. Speaking about the historical roots of Antifa from the 1920s, a century, all the way through till the 2020s. Antonio Gramsci was an Italian communist in the early part of the 20th century that was actually, in the long run, a lot smarter than Lenin and Stalin. They believed that they could crush the world with communism just using subversion tactics, infiltrating agents, creating chaos. Gramsci understood that countries like Italy had too much love of their own patria. They loved their church. They loved their culture, their language. They weren't going to be taken in by, you know, Boris and Natasha sneaking in and committing sabotage and assassination. And that's exactly what happened. You know, that at the end of World War II, it looked like the red sickle was going to sweep across Europe, but we stopped it. People didn't want to be forced into communist subjugation. Antonio Gramsci, along with the Fabians in England and the Frankfurt School in Germany, which was transplanted to the American university system, they understood that to collapse the West, it had to be an inside job. They had to take over all of our cultural institutions, our education system, and spread this rot, this communist rot, all through every layer of our society, so that eventually, when the crisis came, Americans wouldn't even defend America. You know, I use the analogy of the parasitic wasp. I don't know if any of you have ever seen this meme, but the Soviet Union, when we think of winning the Cold War, did the Soviet Union lose? Perhaps. They're gone. But what they did while they were in a powerful communist subversion force, they spread the poison into our body, so that our children are coming out of our universities as little Maoist Red Guards. Make no mistake, that's what this is. This is something completely new in America, where, I mean, I have relatives who do not defend the First Amendment. When they hear about Zero Hedge and the Federalist being, you know, taken or trying, attempted to be taken down by NBC and Google, they cheer for it. They think that right wingers are so dangerous that we shouldn't be given a platform. They are so brainwashed that they actually are encouraging these monuments being taken down. And so this is another thing about the, you know, blowing up our education system. We have children that have no historical background. They can't put a context on any of this. All they can hear is, this guy owned slaves, therefore the statue has to come down. Nowhere in their education are they taught that slavery existed throughout human history in every culture on every continent, and that it was the English and later the Americans who stamped it out and abolished it. I mean, it was Europeans that went into Africa in the 19th and 20th century and stamped it out. You know, slavery was still legal in Saudi Arabia and several African countries until the 1960s. And now it's making a comeback in some countries like Mauritania and Libya, open slave markets. But our children do not get any of that historical context. This is sort of like Cambodia in the 70s, starting with a year zero. We're going to only accept perfect human beings. But let me tell you, there's a danger to this for everyone, because eventually it could come to the point that only vegans can be memorialized. Anybody who was ever a, you know, bloodthirsty meat eater, his statue will have to be torn down. That would include Martin Luther King and others. It never ends once you get into this purity spiral of, you know, the Jacobin French Revolution style ever greater demands for perfect equality. It doesn't end. It doesn't end until the cannibals have feasted on each other and the society has collapsed. Or the other way it can end is with a right-wing reaction and getting a General Pinochet. And this is a very dangerous period we're in, because right now we have generals who are in collaboration, I'm convinced, people like Petraeus, McRaven on the outside, people like Milley on the inside, that are outwardly showing disloyalty to the commander in chief. It's been a hallmark of our country that we elect presidents and the military abides by their decisions. And we have a general of the head of the Joint Chiefs of Staff who is submitting and bowing the knee. In a sense, he pulled a Drew Brees. Yeah, he pulled a Oklahoma State University coach. He got down and he begged for forgiveness for walking with Trump to a church that the Antifa communists had tried to burn down just two blocks from the White House. And imagine a Civil War general saying, I'm sorry, I can't walk with Lincoln. That would be seen as political. It's insane. There were warlike conditions around the very White House. Something like 60 Secret Service personnel were injured, some grievously, by having, you know, like 5-pound and 10-pound bricks thrown at them en masse. We don't hear anything about this. We are rapidly reaching a 1920s Germany moment where there's going to be open street fighting with guns. We've already seen just an inkling of it. This is, I think, 2 days ago in Albuquerque, where the police are refusing to defend any civil property, not your jewelry store, not a statue. The police are out of it. They're standing down. So it was left to volunteer self-appointed civilian militia to try to defend the statue of a conquistador in Albuquerque. The mob outnumbered the self-appointed militia. They were driven away. One of the people that was attending was, you know, at the point of being beaten to death and knifed, and he defended himself with a pistol. So it's getting that close. In South Philadelphia, Italians are defending the Christopher Columbus statue. They're saying, you'll have to come through us if you want to take down that statue. And they're carrying guns. I mean, this is something new in America. And we're only in the early innings of this. We've got this, we still have this pandemic rolling through where they're going to possibly try locking down, which nobody will ever believe now. The lockdown is never going to happen again. Doesn't mean you have to go to a restaurant if you don't want to, but restaurants are going to say the hell with being closed by law when you allow rioters to smash windows, you know, and do anything that they want. So this is absolutely a moment in history when you have to be on the alert. If you're even driving, you know, across a freeway or downtown avenue, you're going to have to be on the alert that you could be stopped in traffic and yanked out of your car and beaten in the United States of America. And the Marxist mainstream media has to take a lot of the blame for this, because they have absolutely been pouring gasoline on the flames of this racial hatred. You know, if you look at the actual data and numbers of white on black crime compared to black on white crime, it's completely out of proportion to reality, but the media puts the telescope on the incidents that do happen and just whip and whip and whip the racial fervor to the point where elderly people are just getting beaten on the sidewalk or in stores. People are being yanked out of cars. And the saying is, get the whitey. I mean, this is crazy in this country that it's coming to this. But we have got to be ready for what's coming next, because we're just starting to see the beginning of the kinetic phase of what's going to happen between now and November. Because believe me, the White House is the great prize. If Biden somehow, if his senile carcass is dragged over the finish line and he is elected, we are going to see this country run by the Obamas, by Valerie Jarrett, you know, by the Black Lives Matter and Antifa supporting senators. This is absolutely going to be the end of the country as we know it.
Just to expand a little bit on this, is that Matt Bracken has quite a knowledge of what really is going on out here. And when he got into false flag operations, it picked my brain a little bit, and I began to immediately relate that to the Gladio operations in Europe. And The Secret Army was a great book written about the Gladio operations. And those were operations set up after World War II to tension the NATO countries to put fear into the public at large, to take that public and then lead them into political, you could say, control, under political control. But we would have to say mind wash control. Or mind control. And so if you go in there in the web and look up a Secret Army, Gladio, you'll pop up, that book will pop up, and you can start reading some of these things that have been done in the past, and really begin to educate yourself and become sort of a intellectual in the, sort of a conspiratorial scholar is the way my good friend Eric Samuelson put it. He coined that term. Conspiracy scholar. He was a fine person and just a stand-up guy. But, coming up next is some comments, that Robert Barnes makes about education, going on out there. And that's the way that they've done this thing is that, they've taken our society and they've been teaching collectivism, Marxist communist, types of teachings, but under the guise of some utopian thing and that this capitalism is no good and the Constitution, should be a live, a constitution, a living constitution, so it can be changed and so forth. But anyway, Robert Barnes with American Countdown is next with some very, very good insights about education and so forth. Well, here we go with Robert Barnes.
Meanwhile, in fact, an article from The Federalist goes into this detail, how our anti-American education system made riots inevitable. It talks about this being year zero in which riots have torn down or vandalized things like Matthias Baldwin, who was an early abolitionist in Philadelphia, his statue, Paul Harris in D.C., another similar abolitionist whose memorial was vandalized. The 54th Massachusetts Regiment also had their memorial vandalized. They are, of course, the all-black Union regiment during the Civil War and slavery. But that isn't going to be in your hip-hop version of history. So if your hip-hop version of history is what's shaping you, this is problematized and deepened and expanded by what's happening in schools and universities. The Federalist talks about the 1619 Project of the New York Times that teaches people that America was founded on racist ideologies when that's actually contrary to the ideas that shaped America. Slavery was the abomination and was always contrary to the core ideas of the country. The fact of its existence, like its existence in many parts of the world, reflected a moral horror and hypocrisy. But by no means was it a reflection or representation or natural flourishing of the core ideas of constitutional liberty celebrated in the Bill of Rights. It's just contrary to common sense in history and the idea of ideas to see it that way. But that is, in fact, what the 1619 Project has been teaching people, and increasingly it's part of school literature across the country. As they note, out of the 100 largest school districts, precisely none have the words America or patriotism in their mission statements. Indeed, they note how much this contradicts and conflicts with the history of public education in the United States, which was about acculturating a wide range of people from a wide range of places into the ideas and ideals of the best of America reflected in things like the Bill of Rights. Notes that the effect of this is that two-thirds of millennials believe that America is both a racist and sexist country foundationally, even though America is probably one of the best it has ever been on both of those terms and is still one of the best countries in the world for people of any color, creed, or gender, as, in fact, the U.S. Supreme Court made clear yesterday, whatever one thinks of the decisions. Meanwhile, Facebook says a page celebrating dead cops does not violate community standards. Yet somehow you can't use certain names of popular people on the political right without getting into trouble. And so that has been the nature of it. While the U.S. has been slow to act, the European Union opens two new antitrust probes over Apple, according to the Wall Street Journal. Apple faces two EU antitrust probes over its apps and the abuse of its power in general in that capacity. So we may see some progress somewhere in a meaningful way sometime soon, we hope. Meanwhile, on the economic front, other continued news as MSN reports, confidence in travel slides, with less than half willing to fly, and that demand for long-haul flights remains close to zero. So we're likely to continue to see problems in hospitality, leisure, travel, transport, and airline industry in the near future. Meanwhile, as reported at Infowars.com, 85% of independent U.S. restaurants may close by the year's end. They note that, in fact, independent restaurants constitute 60% of certain revenues, 4.5 million independent restaurant jobs already lost during the lockdowns, worse than ever, even worse than the Great Depression. They're highly dependent on dine-in revenue. They generate more than $760 billion in annual sales, almost $1 trillion in annual sales, employ millions of people across the country, all at risk because of the lockdown economics and what it produced. Meanwhile, a chart about liabilities and capital, liabilities, deposits with Federal Reserve banks other than reserve balances on weekly average from the Federal Reserve in St. Louis shows a chart where that amount of money is going off the charts. So apparently there appears to be trillions of dollars of other special funds going special places that are not being politically approved by the legislative process, officially approved by the executive process, or even being thoroughly or meaningfully disclosed or detailed. So while the world burns, the Fed continues to fatten up its connected political parties, suggesting there are much more serious problems afoot that we're not paying attention to because of the distraction of the current political environment. Indeed, so in the end, that sort of wraps us up for tonight on American Countdown. As we continue to think and look and process information about what's happening with the rioting and the looting and the BLM movement, the attempts of mass conversion of our culture, it is important, increasingly important, to understand the need to push back on certain cultural narratives, to pay attention to those cultural narratives, to shape our own cultural narratives, and not be able to think we can rely solely upon data or documents or facts or law. Because they have hip-hop has redefined common sense for a whole new generation. And for that generation, it's going to require a major cultural effort to refamiliarize them with American politics, American ideals, American history, and what in fact is the true nature of our society and the true liberty of our country and community. We have to continue to share stories, share news, share information, but also help shape the culture in ways that restructure and reframe the issues in the future so that they can see the world through a different perspective that is not governed by celebrating a gangster culture that has not brought either light or liberty to either the African American community or America. We need to push back in the best of the American traditions. As Martin Luther King said, somewhere I read about the freedom of speech. Somewhere I read about the freedom of the press. Somewhere I read about the right of self-defense. Somewhere I read about the right of due process. Somewhere I read about the right of just compensation if your property is taken. And that somewhere he read was the Bill of Rights, and that is the definition of America. That is the best of America. And we need to rely upon it to push back against these fake news narratives and false definitions of reality shaped by those who would do our country and do our liberties wrong.
Getting back to reality here, and Robert Barnes, though, spells it out in really, really good terms. He's trying to make some sense out of this, but what we're up against is decades of the, you could say, the propagandizing and conditioning of millions of our students, and you just can't do it overnight. Now, Savannah Hernandez is giving us a little bit of an insight into this CHAZ or this CHOP thing up in Seattle. Here we go with Savannah Hernandez and her description.
"2020 has been a wild ride. From a global pandemic to riots sweeping the nation, and now we have seen in live time the creation of a brand new autonomous zone within America's own borders, called CHAZ, or CHOP for short, which stands for the Capitol Hill Autonomous Zone, or the Capitol Hill Occupied Protest. But what is this new area and what does it stand for? This autonomous zone was taken by Black Lives Matter and Antifa protesters in response to the anti-police movement sweeping America, with protesters taking over six blocks of downtown Seattle, including the East Precinct of the Seattle Police Department. Protesters then overtook the police department, ultimately pushing them out of the area, declaring it a cop-free zone and naming it the Capitol Hill Autonomous Zone. The citizens share that this is an autonomous territory outside of the U.S. and have attempted to create their own socialist utopia, complete with free food, clothes, a farm, and most importantly, no police. But what is life like inside of this zone, and how has this week-long experiment played out? Let's take a look. The area has been occupied since last Monday, June 8th, and one of the first things citizens did was construct a border out of police barricades in an attempt to keep their new zone safe. They also have guards who patrol the streets at night to ensure that the community is safe.
Oh, look at this.
Oh, pardon me.
What are the characters?
I go by Red Ranger. This is Spirit Cops, Testing Service. We're the Seattle Superheroes. We patrol around, keep people safe, that kind of thing.
Hey, keep Seattle safe.
We love you back. You guys stay safe tonight, okay?
Once you get past the border, you are free to take whatever food is available in the No Cop Op. A small setup with donated food items sharing that kindness is their currency, and they accept absolutely no monetary donations of any kind. In an attempt to keep people fed, clothed, and hydrated, they resorted to asking for outside donations of various items, such as tents, tables, and toothbrushes. To help ensure the continued cycle of food, citizens have also started their own farm. And to ensure ultimate inclusivity, they even have segregated gardens, specific for Black and Indigenous people and their plant allies. Seems like they're doing well, but keep in mind, this area is not completely autonomous from the U.S. After all, they are still using electricity and water provided by the city of Seattle. And they also, unfortunately, have not been able to handle dangerous situations very well. For example, a dumpster fire was started within the community, and CHAZ members called the local fire department to come and put it out. Another member of the community OD'd on drugs, and the Seattle Fire Department was called yet again to come take care of the situation. But what about crimes committed within the zone? Apparently, theft is a big issue in CHAZ, with one citizen learning the hard way that simply zipping up one's tent is not sufficient protection against theft. He shared on Reddit that he went for a walk and all of his valuables were stolen, including his MacBook, money, and entire week of supplies, leaving him in complete shock that anyone would steal valuable items from a zipped-up tent. Another person in CHAZ was robbed in broad daylight and, due to the lack of police, received no help.
I just had my teeth broken, stolen, got jumped, had my phone stolen, and then you just let it all happen. What the f***? Stay the f*** away from me, everyone. Y'all need police around this bitch if you're me.
You're all right, man. It's just a bad day.
Really? Gave me my keys back then!
Also, early this morning, a locally owned auto shop was broken into. The owner's property was stolen and a fire was started, but again, this cop-free zone left this business owner SOL.
Did you try to call the police or the fire department and they wouldn't show up? Really? You called them?
Yes.
And they just...
Multiple times.
Did they say we're not going to show up, or...?
Well, at first they made it sound like they were going to show up, and then by the time I probably called them the 10th, 11th, I don't know what number it was.
Yeah.
They basically told me they weren't going to come up.
Okay. Did they say why, or were...
Because of all of this.
There is some sense of authority within CHAZ, however, and he goes by the name of Raz Simone, a man some have declared the warlord of CHAZ. In its early beginnings, Raz, the most intimidating and heavily armed member of the community, declared that he would police the area, beating up a fellow Chazian for spray painting a wall and using guns to assert his authority. In this video, he can be seen chasing down the auto shop thief and trying to hold him responsible for his crimes.
They held the gun at me and they were saying that I stole
s***. Unfortunately, one man and his crew couldn't keep the thief down and he ultimately got away. While many are glorifying the CHAZ or CHOP zone for declaring this area their new socialist utopia, how are the citizens that lived in Capitol Hill before it was taken over feeling about this entire situation? Well, let's hear from a resident who was brave enough to speak out.
Yeah, so this is personal, because this is my home, and I don't have cops anymore, and I have people throw grenades in front of me, and you're telling me to just Google something the governor said a few days ago, like... It's just hard because, like, my own government that I've, like, supported and elected, and I'm calling them, telling them what's going on, and they don't care. I don't think that the national media is portraying the situation accurately. Because after Monday, when I realized the governor didn't care, I called everyone in city council. No one would answer. I called the mayor. No one would answer. I couldn't leave voicemails, so I started emailing them. No emails back. The voicemail boxes are closed. I just started panicking.
The mayor of Seattle has spoken out and shared that Chaz is just a block party type atmosphere that could turn into the summer of love. But it seems that the citizens of Seattle and the business owners directly experiencing this feel quite differently. The nation is also patiently watching to see how this communist experiment will work out, but based off of how things are going now, it seems that by the end of this, many citizens will understand the importance of the police and the dangers of a socialist country. This has been Savannah Hernandez for Action 7 News.
Here's a recent news release early this morning about a possible shooting up there in this Chaz or this CHOP, site in Seattle. But here we go with this update now.
In Seattle, police responding to a shooting overnight in the occupied zone, the country known as CHOP, formerly known as Chaz. This comes as the city's police union, get this, is expelled from the area's labor council, citing a failure to, quote, dismantle racism in their institution and society at large. President of the Seattle Police Officers Guild, Mike Solon, joins us now with the latest. Mike, lots to chew on here. Well, let's start with what we know now about what happened inside CHOP. We're getting reports coming in of an incident there. What do you know?
Well, Pete, thanks for having me on again. And as you were aware, violence has now besieged the area known as CHOP. And it is no longer the summer of love. It's a summer of chaos. And early this morning, that violence was raw and real, where one of our community members lost their life, and police are still not allowed into that area, and were prevented to providing that police service to the area to locate victims and or render aid.
Mike,
very troubling.
So you're saying we've got one person killed, potentially others injured. We don't know. We don't know what the incident was, but the Seattle Police Department cannot go in and has not confirmed.
That is correct.
How can that stand in America?
It can't stand in America, and this is a direct result of city leadership, elected officials failing the reasonable community of Seattle to enforce the rule of law. And this just isn't the area occupied in a six-block zone where police are still forbidden and still don't have their East Precinct. This is now impacting our entire city. And last night as well, the flagship precinct, the West Precinct downtown, was defaced with anti-police graffiti. And again, we're left wondering what's next. And now our elected officials have removed our ability to have less lethal chemical munitions that are effective in us for us to disperse unruly, violent crowds to protect those police facilities, let alone ourselves. So we're in a very, very troubling time in Seattle, and it's deeply concerning that everybody across this country needs to be aware of what's going on in Seattle.
What do you know about what does come next? They want less cops, less equipment, less non-lethal equipment, yet at some point this occupied zone has to end, right?
Well, you're going to have the political backbone to finally enforce the rule of law, because if this continues to spiral down, which we saw early this morning,
yeah,
with a homicide, I don't see what the remedy is. So we need leadership now more than ever. And I find it ironic that these same public officials that are creating these decisions that put everybody's public safety at risk are now calling on for defunding the police.
Yeah.
And those two aren't compatible. You can't have defunding the police and better police services because the first thing to go, as you and I both know, Pete, is training.
Yep.
And if you remove the training budget, you remove quality police service, and we know that separating good cops from bad is all about training.
Bingo. Mike, you're spot on. I got to ask you about this, though. The Seattle Police Officers Guild is the police union for the Seattle Police Department, yet the group of unions in Seattle has now kicked you out of the union group. Why?
Well, they wanted us to say that we are a racist institution, and that's completely an egregious attempt for political pandering. And what I think this is an opportunity for us to connect with the other reasonable labor organizations that encompass that labor council so we can all come together and highlight the unreasonable activism that has now besieged Seattle. Political discourse here is falling. And now we have public safety issues that are impacting everybody. And I think this is an opportunity for us to reach the reasonable crowd. And it smacks of hypocrisy. It's discriminatory because, as you and I both know, Pete, mm-hmm. our membership are a wonderfully diverse group of people that resemble Seattle's values.
Of course, Mike, but if you want to be a part of the discourse, just go ahead and admit you're racist right now, and then everything will be fine. Yeah, that's how they look at the
world. That's what they want, and you can't tell me that just is not hypocritical.
Unbelievable. Of course it is. It's discriminatory, it's racist, and it's hypocritical. Mike Solon, thank you so much for your time. We appreciate it.
Hey, Pete, thank you for highlighting this serious issue.
You got it. Very much so.
It seems like many authorities, whether they're city council members or mayors or state representatives or U.S., whatever, all the way up and down the aisle there, are giving in to the mob. Now, we've got to be sympathetic with some of Black Matters, the people that are joining in on Black Matters, Black Lives Matter. That was set off by this very, very evil murder up there in Minneapolis, and we go along with that. I mean, with Black Lives Matters and being sympathetic to them. But they have been taken advantage of by some very extreme groups. And this is what we're beginning to get into. Now, Senator Tom Cotton has made some comments recently, interviewed on Fox, about this recent Supreme Court ruling on the DACA, the Dream, program. And here's what he had to say about that.
Well, someone that's going to be there tonight is Senator Tom Cotton, Republican from Arkansas, Senate Select Intelligence Committee, and Senate Armed Services Committee. He's on both, and he's also an Army veteran. Tom, Senator, thank you so much for being on the program this morning. You're outside the arena right now. You'll be in there tonight. You can see the crowds, the lines, the anticipation. What do you expect from the president tonight?
Well, I expect the president to explain why we need four more years of Donald Trump in the White House and why we can't afford Joe Biden in the White House. Look, our country and our economy has been hit by a terrible pandemic unleashed on the world by China. Many people are still out of work. They're still struggling to get back on their feet. But we are starting to see a great American comeback. We had the best jobs report ever just earlier this month. We're going to see the economy continue to grow. We want Donald Trump to do what he has already done, which is turn this economy once again into one of the best in our history. We cannot afford to have Joe Biden in the White House repeating the 8 years of slow, sluggish economic growth of the Obama-Biden era.
You know, Senator, speaking of Joe Biden, one of the contenders to be Biden's VP is Susan Rice, and she made some interesting comments, quite controversial comments this week. Let's take a listen. I want to get your reaction.
This election and whoever Joe Biden chooses among many very talented candidates is about getting Joe Biden in the White House, somebody who can heal and unify the nation, and remove Donald Trump and consign him and those who've supported him in the Senate to the trash heap of history.
What do you think, the trash heap of history?
If anyone belongs in the ash heap of history, it's Susan Rice. Remember, Susan Rice was the typhoid Mary of the Obama administration. She was in the middle of every debacle in the Obama era, from the reckless war in Libya to the attacks on our consulate in Benghazi, to coddling the Chinese Communist Party, to the Russia collusion hoax. And her comments are just reflective of what Democrats consistently do, which is disparage and insult hardworking conservatives and Republicans all around this country. From Hillary Clinton calling Donald Trump supporters a basket of deplorables, or Joe Biden saying that 30 or 45 million Americans are just not very good people, and now Susan Rice saying this, I think it reflects the patterns of Democrats looking down on Americans who simply don't share their far left-wing radical views.
Senator, let me ask you, talking about Democrats and liberal views, the DACA ruling this week. Very important our viewers understand it wasn't about the merits of the policy of DACA, but rather on the DHS's failure to adhere to some administrative procedures. You actually believe that Chief Justice John Roberts really ought to resign and run for office if he wants to get political. This comes after he sided with the liberals on the court in Obamacare, in the census ruling, and in the recent LGBTQ ruling also this week.
Yeah, unfortunately, Chief Justice Roberts consistently seems more concerned about the reputation of the court and his reputation among Democrats and the media than the rule of law. He did things like this in the first Obamacare case, the second Obamacare case, the case last year about asking a citizenship question on our census, and now in this immigration case in which the court ruled that President Trump cannot simply undo what President Obama did. That cannot be the law. And if the Chief Justice thinks he has such excellent political judgment, I would recommend that he resign and travel to Iowa for the caucuses and see if he can earn the votes of his fellow Americans. If he wants to be the Chief Justice, though, he should follow the law and he should uphold the Constitution and our laws as they are written, not apply two different standards, one for President Obama and one for President Trump.
Senator, briefly, why does this keep happening? You know, John Roberts was supposed to be a conservative, appointed by Bush. Why do these slides happen?
It's very disappointing. This has gone back, as I said, to the beginning of the Roberts Court. He has repeatedly put what he perceives to be the reputation of the court and perhaps his own reputation with the media and with Democrats and with elite lawyers and law professors ahead of what the law obviously requires. It's repeatedly pointed out by other justices on the Supreme Court, like Justice Scalia, Justice Thomas, Justice Alito. It needs to stop. The way to protect the integrity of the court is to uphold the Constitution and our laws as written, not as the media and the Democrats wish they were written.
Senator Tom Cotton, thank you so much for your time. Please go out and write another New York Times op-ed for us, will you? Caused a little bit of trouble last time with that one. Good stuff. Senator, thanks a lot. Appreciate your time.
Thanks. Here's a couple of minutes of Lou Dobbs. Here we go now.
Good evening, everybody. We begin with breaking news involving the case against President Trump's former National Security Advisor, General Michael Flynn. The Department of Justice and General Flynn's attorney, Sidney Powell, today both filed scathing responses to the brief written by Judge Emmett Sullivan's shadow prosecutor, John Gleason. The former Clinton-appointed judge wrote in a brief last week that the Department of Justice's request to dismiss General Flynn's case was both, quote, pretextual and, quote, a gross abuse of prosecutorial power. In today's response, the Department of Justice didn't hold back, saying Gleason's interpretations contradicts precedent and lacks a sound basis in the Constitution. Sidney Powell, writing an even harsher critique of Gleason, accusing him of conducting a wrap-up smear against Flynn that demonstrates the difference between a Department of Prosecutions and a Department of Justice. Powell concluded in her argument that the only lawful action left for the court to take is to dismiss in its entirety the case against General Flynn. And more breaking news from the Department of Justice. They are now recommending that lawmakers strip away all legal protections for big tech giants, including Twitter, Facebook, and Google. Those protections fall under the Section 230 of the 1996 Communications Decency Act, a law supported and defended by Republicans and Democrats alike for decades. Under that law, big tech companies have found safe harbor from any lawsuits arising from user-generated content or their decisions to censor what appears on their platforms. In other words, they have had the best of all worlds, big tech and social media. The Justice Department now says it's time for change, partly because, quote, criminals and other wrongdoers are increasingly turning to online platforms to engage in a host of unlawful activities, including child sexual exploitation, selling illicit drugs, cyberstalking, human trafficking, and terrorism.